Hey, welcome to Athlete on Fire. I'm Scott Jones, your host. Thank you guys so much for joining. Today we've got a real treat. We have Max Conserva, who lost his leg as an 8-year-old. No, lost a lot of his leg. I won't say he lost his whole leg. But a lot of his leg was damaged in a freak and crazy accident. He tells the story on the show today. I was literally sweating when he was telling me the story. Just amazing what he's gone on to do with his life, what his mission is. I think you guys will really, really enjoy it. You can learn more at goodleg.org, and it's a great story. Anyway, if you guys are here for the first time, Athlete on Fire is all about bridging the gap between amazing athletes and the rest of the world. I think we do that again. You can check out more at athleteonfire.com. Thanks a lot, guys. Awesome. All right, here with Max. Presented in such an amazing fashion that by the time people get to this part of the show, we'll seem like mere mortals, but that's okay. How you doing, Max?
Good, man. Good. Excited to be on.
I was just...
What was the process of you finding me?
So I've done some work with Romp Global out here.
Yeah.
So one of the women... So I've done some stuff with an SCD, a kid that I worked with. He actually skied for an SCD. Do you know an SCD by any chance?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! Now I'm brain freezing. But they work with adaptive athletes out here in Colorado.
Okay.
They have like wheelchair lacrosse team. They do a lot of stuff up in the mountains, Winter Park, skiing, a lot of research.
Nice.
And one of my clients, so I'm in health and fitness. I've been in health and fitness forever. One of my clients, she was the head of the young leaders of the NSCD. Yeah, so I started working with her, and me and my wife have an event production company out here, so we've partnered with them in a couple things and gone out to do some interviews with Athlete on Fire, and then Romp, the marketing lady from Romp, reached out to me to do some cross-promotional stuff, and I've worked with adaptive athletes and just clients in general. And
Yeah,
so I guess long story short, Max, is – well, actually, short story really long is Romp tweeted something with Good Leg. And I was like, oh, this would be awesome because you're doing okay, so I gotta read this before we even get, I don't even know if there is a starting point. We're gonna talk for like 40 minutes and whatever happens. But the article you sent me, that was just perfect. You wrote, are you ready to be an athlete? So the first thing, I'm just gonna read it. It says, I don't CrossFit, I don't powerlift, I don't Olympic lift, I don't do gymnastics, I don't cycle, I don't hike, I don't swim, I don't climb, I don't play team sports, and I certainly don't run, not at all. I made all these affirmations at various points in my life leading to a lifestyle that was not active and not athletic. And you go on to write, I don't know, it's a good little article, 7 or 8 paragraphs of kind of the transition to when you decided that you actually were an athlete, or at least you considered yourself an athlete at a certain point. And that's, I guess it's going to be the basis of your story, right? Isn't that's you in a nutshell, I would assume, as far as this is concerned, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's really me finding my athletic life over the past 5 years now, since about 2012.
Okay.
After my accident when I was a young kid, I still participated in certain things, but those activities slowly dwindled just to a couple key activities that I did because I found a way to do them when I was young with my disability. And even more than that, I had a group of friends that I felt were safe, and I kind of did those activities with those friends, and I was just lucky enough to stay in contact with those friends throughout my life. But in terms of considering myself an athletic person and trying new things, it was something that wasn't in my mentality at all until about 2012.
Yeah, I mean, Athlete on Fire was born of the idea that everyone's an athlete. So I think there couldn't be a more perfect subject for this podcast. I've been doing this for a few years, and you know, I think everybody's a good subject, but people who have had a lot of time to really think about their identity as far as what it means to be an athlete, the ones who have had more time to think about it and who come from more interesting backgrounds, like you had a kind of a roundabout way to figure it out, you know? It's just perfect. So, okay, I know your story. I've read a lot about you in the last few days, and just to get to know who I was going to interview, But let's go back. Let's go back even before the accident when you were 8 years old. Let's go to when you – do you remember being 5, 6, and 7? I actually have a really strong curiosity about this because I have a 5.5-year old, and I want to know how much I'm destroying this kid. So there's a reason for this question.
Yeah, no, I absolutely remember. I think it helps if you look back in your life. If you have like step function changes, you can gauge yourself, right? And so I know I moved from my house. I was born around Fresno and moved down to Simi Valley when I was at the age of five. So any memory in Fresno is a memory pre-5. And that's pretty shaky. I got a couple memories of playing Rambo in the yard and riding big wheels around. But then after that, moving to Simi Valley in Southern California, it was pretty much your basic huge suburb. I ran around that neighborhood playing with my friends. I guess, I don't know if they do that anymore. But yeah, I was one of those kids where wake up in the morning. good. Wake up in the morning, run out around the neighborhood, get in trouble, and then come back home. And that was me from the age of 5 until the age of 8 when I got into an accident.
Okay. So, so yeah, it takes to the accident. And really quick, before we dive in too much, guys, if you are already kind of have your interest piqued, I want to say this a few times throughout the show so I don't forget, but you guys can learn more at goodleg.org. And then I have all of Max's links to everything he's doing on the show notes at athleteonfire.com. This will be episode 183. So there's my promotional piece. So take us back to when you're 8, and then I'm sure there'll be a lot of fast-forwarding because the really interesting part is the last 5 years, in my opinion. So take us back.
Right pre-accident, I was a really athletic kid. At least I seemed athletic when compared to my peers in elementary school. But I was doing like swim team, karate, and soccer. To actually like a state level, even though we were so young, I don't know if it really matters then. We're running around chasing the ball, but I was still playing on a state level team. One day I went with one of my friends. This was a routine we had where we'd sneak away from our house. We'd go down to the local 7-Eleven back when arcades were still big in 7-Elevens, and we'd go play Street Fighter at 7-Eleven. That was nice. How old are you, Scott?
Yeah, I'm 38. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you're right in it.
That they actually had arcade games at, like, gas stations and stuff. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's hilarious.
It was like when kids would go down and, like, huddle up around the arcade and, you know, fight each other. And so we're down there playing video games, and I've been told not to go down there. And I've been told not to go because there's a major intersection you have to cross. But I was already a really strong-headed kid, and so we'd go down. And one day, August 1st, 1989, when I was coming back with my friends, we're coming up to an intersection, and it was a red light, so we stopped. And then once the light turned green in the direction we wanted to go to, I rolled down the curb, and I only made it a couple feet off the curb when a semi-truck slammed into the left side of my body. And so what had happened was the semi-truck was sitting there waiting on a red light, and it was just looking forward. And when I rolled into the intersection, I was so small on this little 18-inch bike that he didn't even see me. And so he progressed to go, knocked me off my bike. I flew into the intersection, and he just kept coming, kept driving, because he didn't even feel me. It was such a unfair match of mass. And so he came to run over me, and I reached up and grabbed the bumper, and I basically hung on to the bumper, and we drove down the street together.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I never actually got ran over, or even the initial impact wasn't, you know, something beyond bruising, but it was me getting basically drug underneath the truck around the corner. And so the truck just kept driving and picking up speed, but then luckily some other people saw the truck. And they ran out from across the sidewalk, and everybody stopped and, you know, waved the truck down. And then the truck backed up, and I actually didn't feel anything.
Really?
I was like, I mean, I remember the whole thing. I remember it being like all this tremendous vibration and incredibly hot because it was like Southern California, noon. The sun was blaring down on the hot asphalt. And when the truck rolled back, I was just like, all right, like, I'm okay. Yeah. And I stand up. And I look down at my leg, and it's just like a mangled, bloody mess. Oh. And right at that time, I still remember what people said to me. People ran over, and they were like, sit down, sit down. And so I sat back down in the asphalt again, still no pain. All I could feel was just the searing heat on my back as I laid on the hot asphalt for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And then all the ambulances came, they took me away. And that was kind of the initial chapter. I remember going into surgery, and then I spent about the next month going from CME to Children's Hospital Los Angeles, where I stayed there for the next month as they tried to salvage my leg, what was left of it.
Wow. Hey, really quick, I'm getting some feedback on where your hands are hitting something. Like, this is me being lazy, so I don't have to edit any of this stuff. But that's how you bring levity to a horrific freaking story right there. I can feel being there. It's crazy, because having a little dude, like I have a guy that's almost six, just imagining a little guy hanging on a freaking semi. Like that, yeah. I'm almost sweating right now. And I also had experience when I was growing up, one of my best friends when I was in middle school. We were just dumbasses. Like, at our bus stop, I don't know how it was in your neighborhood, but it was like the kids, the inmates running the asylum, because we were all latchkey kids. So yeah. Like when you went to the bus stop, when you got home, there was no parents for an hour before or after both of those. So it was crazy. So we'd throw tennis balls at cars at the main intersection at the bus stop. And this one day, my best friend at the time decided that he would hop on the ladder of a conversion van when it came to the stop, and he held on. They had no idea he was on there, and then about 50 yards down the road, the car was going about 45, he decides to jump off, friggin' drops and rolls, and comes back, and he's like scratched up, but nothing major. And later that night, his mom or dad came to my door and like, has anything weird happened to Sean today? And we're like, no, not really. And then my mom looks at me, she knew I was lying, and I was like, well, he did jump on that. So this kid never told me. Anyway, embolism. He had headaches all day. He never told me. He was in the hospital, and the doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. And if they didn't figure it out, like, between our collaboration and everything, he had a blood clot. He would have been gone in, like, another 4 hours. So they went and operated on his skull.
Wow.
Great. But it's like, how fluke, you know, the freaking semi had no idea you were there, right? I would assume.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it totally. I mean, all the... my mom may be listening to this podcast at some point, but all the trouble we would get into, I mean, it wasn't crazy, I think, but there are so many close calls and different things. And unfortunately, that's just a part of growing up to a certain extent. You just hope you don't hit that 1% where something happens. And unfortunately, you know, despite my parents' best efforts of saying, don't do that, I did it anyways. You know, I still remember completely disobeying what I was supposed to do. Not like they ever brought that up again, but I still remember doing it.
It's like he doesn't get guilt for tearing his leg up, but when he's old enough, he's gonna know. Like, there's no need right now.
Yeah, well, it's that sensation you talk about. Like, now as I'm old enough, I don't have a family, but when I think about what they must have went through, you know, when you can thinking, oh, did I tell him enough? Maybe I should have grounded him. Maybe I should have been more stern. You know, did he get the point not to go there? But, you know, when I look back at it, it's like you could not have controlled. I knew better in my own mind, and I still have that same mentality today. And I'm glad I do.
Most kids know better. And that's the like, oh, my gosh, dude. I'm not a hard ass, but I me and my wife are entrepreneurs. We both work from home a lot of the day. We take care with our kids. Like, I'll watch my kids on Tuesdays and part of Wednesdays, and I end up being at these, I'll go to a playground in the suburb here in Denver. And yeah, I was writing my buddy yesterday. It's like, I can't go. I cannot go to the playground because, like, literally if a kid isn't like 10 years old, and I'm going to say the mom, because 90% of the time it's the mom out here, right? So the mom is like spotting them on like a 3 foot high thing at the playground. And I'm like, oh, like, a mom actually didn't push my cow away, but she made sure that she was doing this part of the playground the other day instead of him, so it was safer for all the kids. And I was like, boys, let's go. We went 30 yards away, because it's at his elementary school right outside of it. We went 30 yards away, and I just let him climb on trees for the next 20 minutes because I couldn't be around people. It was driving me crazy. But the point is, they know better. You knew better. Yeah. And if it never happened, who knows? Your life would have definitely been different. But people are going to go out. You know, every little kid is a different human being, and he needs to have those experiences and be able to test it a little bit. And an accident in this world, believe it or not, everybody, there's such thing as an accident, an unprecedented one in a million accident, and it happens. And luckily, it didn't end in death or anything like that. And you're doing some really cool stuff right now. So let's fast forward a bit, man. Like, so I'm going to make some assumptions here. Like, I'm assuming that getting back out there and moving well was difficult. I'm assuming the technology wasn't ideal for a young active kid to really feel confident. I'm going to assume there's some self-conscious things. I'm assuming a lot of things because I've worked with people that have prosthetics and other things going on. We'll make all of these assumptions and having an interesting childhood and all that. But then fast forward, we're here 5 years ago, and there's something in this article that you wrote that really made me want to talk about right off the bat, is that you would always go to the doctors and they'd say, hey, if you just wait a few more years, the technology is coming around. Hey, if you just wait a few more years, the technology is coming around. So, we get it. Technology is getting better. But what did that do to your mindset a lot of those years until you kind of finally said, okay, this is me? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, that kind of mindset that I adopted, a lot of people adopt in the healthcare system. And I think it can be very self-defeating. So that was a general message I got. It's like you go into the healthcare system, you have a major traumatic event, and then, you know, the specialists come in, you get your orthopedic work, the orthotist, prosthetist come in, they give you your equipment, the therapists come in, they kind of treat that acute care, and they basically give you everything they have. And then you walk out the door, and then you are the person that they built you back into. And most of the time, people aren't satisfied with what they're left with. I mean, I had my leg right now is like 2 inches shorter. It's like my ankle is like this big around, like my ankle and all its muscles. So it's like 50% the volume, 50% the weight. It's crooked. The bones are twisted. The joints are deformed. It's like nothing works right. And so I spent my whole life looking at this limb I had and thinking one day, because of the messages I got from the healthcare system, like, hey, they're going to come out with some new cool surgery, some stem cell, build my muscles back, or like some bionic leg, you know, something's going to happen. And that's what I was hoping for. And I just would go into the doctors. They tell me this is how things are. And then I'd walk away thinking like, okay, that's the way it is. There's no new brace this year. There's no new surgery. There's no new therapy. What changed was after hearing that for 22 years in a row, it's not like I went every year, but you know, when I went back at about 5 years ago or so, the age of 30, I walked back into the medical system like, hey, I've gotten, you know, it's been decades since my accident. Hey, you know, a long time ago when I was a kid, you told me there's going to be new procedures, new devices. And I went around all over California, all the best hospitals, talked to all the best surgeons. And the last one I saw was in Stanford. And the doctor was like, Max, stop. Like, you've seen the best orthopedic surgeons in the world. There's nothing. We can't even match the functionality you have right now. If we were to take your leg off or do a procedure, there is just nothing. Everything you can already do, you're already ahead of the curve. But I wasn't satisfied with what I had.
Right.
And so it was from that point on that I started really thinking, like, why has nothing happened over decades and decades? Why has nothing changed? And I got depressed, like, nothing's changed in decades. Why would anything change in the decades going forwards? And the more I thought about it was I began to come to the conclusion that, well, you know, maybe it's not that it's so complicated. Maybe it's just that no one spent a ton of time really looking at this problem closely. And maybe if I, as an amateur, even though I didn't have any kind of medical degree or anything associated with that, maybe if I really invested my time, I could start pushing the needle forward. Maybe there's some easy things, like let's pretend that everything isn't found out and the experts I saw don't know everything. Like, what can I do to make my life easier, to make myself more functional, to make myself more comfortable with being who I am? And that really changed, and I wrote about this in the article, that really changed my perspective from waiting for someone to come in and take this problem away from me to me looking at my leg and recognizing, like, it's not me against you, it's me and you. And it's like, whatever thing I want to do, you're coming with me. And so it changed my approach to things. And I just accepted kind of the level I was at and just thought, hey, can I get one step a little bit better? Can I get my equipment to work a little bit more? And that's the path I started on. And we can get into it, but it's just like the progress I made and how fast I made it blew me away. Never would expect it.
Well, that's the idea. The idea that everyone has, they have that energy to go and see what they're made of, and we'll speak athletically, whether it's just an inkling, whether it's like a 0.001%, you know, when you walk by, you know, maybe you've never done anything in your whole life and you walk by an NBA basketball game on TV and you feel a little bit of energy, like maybe that's the inkling that you need, but you've never tapped into it. And for you, it just sounds like it was a mindset, a mind shift, that, and as sad as this might sound, everybody, it's true. People really, as a whole, care about themselves, and they are taking care of themselves. And you're probably hurting physically and mentally in a lot of ways. And until you kind of took hold of that, people weren't going to help as much until you really took care of yourself. And it's just a good analogy for life.
Yeah.
You know, you see it all the time. You see it in health and fitness. You see it with weight loss a lot of times when people finally, you know, I was talking to my buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the energy it takes to eat a big, fat, greasy burger, it takes the same energy to eat something really healthy, you know? The energy doesn't matter. You have the energy to do these things. But where's the intent for all that stuff? So the fact that you figured that out. So you figured out, and you want to start. So where did it happen? Did you say, okay, I'm going to try to start moving better with what I have, or I'm going to start using what I have to move better? Like, what was the genesis?
It was really a full court press on everything. It was getting to a point in my life where I just laid everything on the table and was like, listen, like, I'm fucked. It's like, my leg is wrecked. You know, I really looked at it for the first time. It's never going to be normal. It's never going to be fixed. There's no max now and then max 2.0 somewhere in the future. This is it. No one's going to help me. And that wasn't from like, oh, poor me, no one's going to help me. It was just the fact of the matter. This is a hard problem. And just as I'm dealing with this problem, everybody else is dealing with their own hard problems. So how can I expect anybody to solve this hard problem for me? They have their own families, their own hobbies, their own professional stuff. You know, I'm one of maybe 100 patients they see over the course of the month. And like, they're going to play detective and figure all this stuff out. And so that's what really got me thinking. And then I just thought, all right, I'm just going to do everything. Like, everything, it seems like a good idea. It's just getting done. And then if it doesn't work, then whatever, I'll move on. And I tried a lot of things, but one of the cornerstones became CrossFit.
Nice.
And the reason it was is because I had a buddy, a good friend, Juan Carlos, that was my roommate, and he'd been doing it for years, and he had described it to me. And, you know, you talked about that kind of sensation of it, of, you know, something athletic sounding fun. I liked the methodology they talked about. It sounded really fun. I hung out with some of his friends. Like, it was a cool environment, and I just... It didn't need to be any more than I just thought, like, that would be cool if I could do that. But in my mind, I thought, I probably can't do half of the things they want to do. I don't want to be the guy in the back of the class slowing everybody down. I don't want to explain all this stuff. I don't want to be a problem. I don't want to figure this out.
How ridiculous does that sound, though, after the fact?
Oh, completely. Yeah. completely.
It's crazy.
Because in the end, like, breaking from the story a little bit, it's like, why do you exercise? Why do you do anything athletic in the first place?
Right.
You know, endorphins, it feels great. It's healthy for your body. It's fun. You get outdoors. I mean, the list goes on and on. Like, what do those things change because you have a disability?
Zero.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And I could even make the argument that all those things are much more significant. Learning about your body. And so I could not see the forest for the trees, you know, in that part. But what he did that was awesome was he had bought me for my birthday a one-on-one appointment with the owner of the gym,
nice.
Kelly Starrett. And so I went in there and I had a one-on-one with him. And he basically, he was a physical therapist. So he looked at my stuff and he's like, yeah, you're fine. Come on in. We'll do it. It's cool. And that's where it started. And then I walked in that first day and it's like I bought a month membership. And I was like, all right, like I bought a month. I'm going to get my month's worth. So here I am.
Nice. Yeah. If you, Starrett's a mobility WOD guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. His stuff's really good. That's a huge CrossFit, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a prolific CrossFit. We have about 300 members. I work there now.
Oh, do you really? Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Now I know you're a strong dude. I'm not weak. If you hit the table one more time, I'm just kidding.
Oh, sorry.
I'm coming through this mic. No,
it's my Italian. I can't help it.
Yeah, if you guys are listening to this, but the dude talks with his hands. It's cool. It's really cool. So I had a thought right before you got to this. So
yeah,
why was an amputation, or I know they had to amputate parts, but why was like not a just below knee amputation and a possibility for you? Because that would have made, from what I understand, it probably would have made things a lot easier, right?
No.
No, it wouldn't? Okay.
No, yeah. So the decision to amputate is based around functionality and based around pain. And I've always been high functioning, even though, like, if you saw any pictures of my leg, it's a complete train wreck, but it deformed in a way where it kind of works.
Okay.
And then the second component is I don't have a ton of pain. And that's usually the knockdown drag out where it's just like somebody wakes up every day and they just have pain and pain and they try everything and they can't get rid of the pain. And the only option is to cut it off.
Okay.
So like right now there would be no functional benefit for me to drop or few. There'd be few. It'd be like a 30% gain, 70% loss if I were to get an amputation.
Yeah. Well, your prosthetic is interesting. The design is interesting because it has to be. It's customized, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And you know, like this kid that I work with, his was from the reason he has a prosthetic is because he was amputated at a young age because his leg was growing like just at a right angle, like straight up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like below the knee, but there were issues with growth plates, so he had to keep going back for surgery. Like pretty brutal, you know.
Yeah.
But it's pretty straightforward. It's a suction based prosthetic. He throws it on there. The suction keeps it on. But it doesn't. It just looks like a stick that you put on your on the bottom of your leg. Yours looks like some Transformer junk, dude. Like it looks pretty impressive. And I've seen tons of different models. I was telling you before, like Romp Global is a charity out here, and they had a charity event recently where they had all their like mountaineering prosthetics, they had all their climbing prosthetics, just all kinds of cool stuff, right? I'm assuming yours is built for day-to-day high functioning movement. So explain what's different about it and what the challenges have been.
Yeah, well, first off, the big difference is it's not a prosthetic, it's an orthotic.
Okay.
So I technically have my left whole leg in the sense of like I have the bottom of my foot and I go all the way up to my thigh. So what I wear is really a leg brace.
Gotcha.
The injury was I was laying on my side when I was getting dragged. And so imagine just going from your kneecap to the outside and just taking everything away.
Okay.
So all the skin, all like your quads, all the muscle, all your half your knee, the nerves, everything. So it's like I got cut laterally and just this whole cross section removed. So it didn't really that as well. It didn't really yield well to like an amputation. It wasn't like my foot just got smashed. And so they're like, okay, everything above the foot's good. It's like I have a scar that runs from my femoral head all the way down to my mid calf and actually runs up my back somewhat because I was laying on my side. Yeah. So this put me in a category with my injury, my deformity into a really small category. There's not a lot of people that have specifically what I have going on. So I basically had to design my own brace.
Wow.
And so all the stuff you see, I have a hand in designing and or fabricating everything I do. And I've been lucky enough through the last 5 years through, you know, doing the work I've done to meet a lot of incredible people. Like right when I leave here, I go down to Stanford to work with some mechanical engineers on like a new knee thing I'm designing.
Cool.
And then tomorrow I'll probably be at UCSF working with the orthotics prosthetics department. They just take a really keen interest in the stuff I've done.
So the difference in, just for the listeners too, the difference in orthotic and prosthetic is orthotic is a support device and prosthetic is a replacement device. Is that?
Exactly.
Okay. But yeah, that's interesting because laterally, to lose so much laterally to create an ortho, that's really interesting. Anyway, let me comprehend this for a second.
Then with that, it's like everything is custom on it. Like everything is custom. It's 5 years of, like, if you look behind me, I know people don't see video, but there's like a workbench. Can you see that?
I saw it before. I was going to mention that.
That's like that's where I work every day. Like, I just broke my brace this morning doing resistance runs in the gym, and I'm going to just pop it back on there and tweak a few things and fix it.
I love because I'm a snowboarder, and I met my wife on a chairlift. Like, that's what we do. And you use the BOA technology from the snowboard. But so if you guys know, like, and there's that technology is used with a lot of different stuff now too, but specifically for the boots, it helps tighten up the laces on the boot. You just kind of twist it, and is it heavy duty nylon? What do they use there?
They use either steel wire wrapped in plastic, or they use this like synthetic high tensile, I don't even know what it's called.
It's like fish line. It's like really heavy. It's weird, but it's strong as all get out. Like, you can't do anything to the stuff. So you found a way to use that for your just explain the functionality on that, because I thought that was a cool part of the video I watched.
Yeah. And that version you saw. So since then, that was like one BOA I had built. I now have six all over my brace, and they adjust different facets of my brace.
Nice.
And so, like, mid workout, I'm cranking one thing up and like loosening up something else. But yeah, the genesis of that was basically having snowboarding boots with a BOA, and then thinking this would be so much better on my brace than Velcro. I don't have to, like, once I put my pants on, my snowboarding pants on, you can't adjust Velcro, right? You have to, like, get two hands in there. Velcro gets old really fast. It slips. You can't operate it with one hand easily. And so all these things, I thought, hey, if I take this BOA device, gut it out of the boot, and then strap it onto my brace, it would work. And that was one of the first projects I ever tried. And it went from pipe dream to reality in one day. And that was one thing where I was just like, maybe this isn't so hard, you know? Yeah. Maybe if it's just no one's thought to do this. It's not rocket science. I don't have to know a bunch of stuff. I just got like a box cutter, opened my boot up and stuck it on.
That's awesome.
And then since then, there's a company called Click Medical that has stepped in to fill that gap. And they've been building pieces for orthotics and prosthetics specifically. And they've been really helpful for me. Hooking me up with product so I can test it and try it out.
All right, we're gonna have a little fun now.
Yeah.
You're in San Fran. I wish I would have met you a little sooner. I was there a couple months ago, just playing.
Oh yeah,
it was fun.
Good city.
Yeah, it's fun. Oh my goodness, we were everywhere out there. It's ridiculous. All right, what's the furthest you've ever run to date?
Furthest I've ever run is 11 miles.
What's the hardest workout you've ever done?
Oh God, that might have been last weekend. I stepped off a plane and did the CrossFit 17.2 open. It was 100 feet carrying 70 pounds in the overhead position, walking back 16 pull-ups, and then 8 power cleans, and do that as many times as you can in 12 minutes. And I almost threw up about 6 minutes in.
How much was on the cleans?
The cleans were same, 70 pounds.
70? Okay.
Dumbbells. All dumbbells.
All dumbbells. Okay. I was going to say seems okay. Yeah, that'll get the lunge up there.
Yeah, it was just the holding weights overhead and walking around killed me.
I've been doing a lot of stuff. I'm doing some stuff this summer. So my dad passed away last October, and he was 62. So I'm going to go back. He retired to West Virginia. He's a coach. And I've conned a few friends to run 100K in his where he retired from where he lives to the highest point in West Virginia. So I'm training for 100K right now, and it's gonna hurt so bad. It's gonna hurt so bad. But I've been doing a lot. Base strength stuff again that I haven't done in a while, and just been doing a lot of farmer's carries. But just doing some crazy adaptations off of them. So something I really like doing right now is find like a weight that's, I don't know, like 20 pounds total, so 10 pounds each arm. That's light enough that you could do for 4 or 5 minutes if you had to. And then go on 100 yards farmer's carry, and then on the way back just doing isolated one arm presses while you walk, and keeping one arm down, so you're still getting to carry on the other hand, so you're just getting crazy grip strength and, and overhead. But I've been doing all these things. I'm thinking about every thing that can possibly help for all the hiking and stuff, because it's in the mountains in West Virginia. That would help. And anything overhead, just it burns out so freaking fast. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's a positional movement, and either you can hit the position where you get the weight nice and stacked right over your feet, you know, your hands, your shoulders, your hips, and your feet are all lined up, or if you can't get your arm all the way up, it's a problem. And you're gonna suffer.
So with your leg, so for overhead stuff, from a stability standpoint, does that give you challenges? Can you lock out and clear and get up top on those movements?
I'm good in extension, so opening my hips, extending my knee.
Okay.
Ankle, not so good with extension. It's really in deep flexion that I have a problem. Right. So my leg can only bend 90 degrees, and it also, it doesn't bend normally. It actually bends sideways.
Oh, so like at a certain point on the way down, does it start rotating out, or does it from the beginning?
From the beginning. So it goes out like 45 degrees. So, you know, you're saying your buddy's leg was growing sideways. My leg is essentially grown sideways. But what I do functionally is I externally rotate my hip. So it brings this knee that's out. I externally rotate my hip. So it pulls it back under.
Okay.
So it still keeps it in a functional plane. These are all things I just had to learn.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I was in a gym and I was just trying to hit these positions. Like, hey, how is a squat supposed to look?
Yeah.
And then I take my deformed leg and I try to hit a squat, and all kinds of things go wrong. My knee dives in, you know, my heel comes off the ground, and I'm like, okay, that can't work.
Yeah.
And so it's just learning those like archetypes and then comparing my body against it, and trying to just get a little closer to that archetype.
Right.
And that was a revolutionary thinking. It's so simple. But it wasn't until I just learned that basic positional movement where I was like, hey, this is the knowledge I need to like talk to my surgeon with, my orthotist, the person who helps make my brace. And so I can give them some really good feedback. Like, hey, when I squat down, like, this is what happens. Like, how can I fix this from a movement perspective? How can I fix it from an orthotic perspective, or maybe even a surgical perspective?
Yeah.
And that was like so powerful for an impairment.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I've been in health and fitness for 15, 20 years, and you want a certain result out of a movement. So you want, you know, if you're doing a basic squat, you'll see your glutes firing off. You'll see your quads firing off evenly. And when you do a squat, on what would look natural, you're not going to, I'm assuming, and I'm guessing based on what you just said, like, you're not going to have, your quads aren't going to fire off evenly if you do what a squat for me looks like. So you have to reposition to get that same stimulus. Am I saying that correctly?
So, I wouldn't say to get the same stimulus. What we have to start thinking about when we're working with anybody with a physical impairment is you're working with, and this is now what I do professionally. When you're working with somebody with a physical impairment, they have a subset of what a normal human body can do. And so we need to start thinking about positionally, can we do the task that you're asking?
Right.
And if not, is there an alternate strategy we can take to help de-emphasize the impairment and emphasize the joints that fully function?
Yep.
So I'll give you one example. Like me squatting with my feet parallel right next to each other is a problem.
Yeah.
But if I just move my injured leg forward, it then decreases the demand on my ankle. So when I squat down, I don't have to dorsiflex my ankle as much, and it allows me to perform that squat, perform that task, even though the stimulus is slightly changed, right? Like I'm prioritizing my hamstrings by moving my foot up and prioritizing my quads on my back leg.
Yeah.
But I can now positionally keep my torso upright, keep the load here, and complete the movement.
Yeah, get in that range. Yeah, that's the kid that I keep talking about, his prosthetic, or his right leg, is 2 or 3 inches shorter than his left. So when he tries to do squats, he can't square up and do them. A, he's going to fall back because the prosthetic is basically stuck in the ground. So he's going to push him back when he gets down low enough.
Yeah.
So pulling that right foot out a bit so he can get that flexion in his hip so he can actually develop those muscles is really important.
Yeah, do you still work with him right now?
Not as much. He's a senior in high school. He's doing all this finishing up stuff. But he's a wrestler for the longest time. I work with him about once every week or two. I still work with a lot of his family. But
do this for him next time you meet him, real quick. His prosthetic leg, shift it forward about one half step. Try that. This will allow him to keep his foot flat in the ground. I realize I'm hitting the table again. In addition to that, test going wider in the squat, like wider than you'd normally recommend somebody squat.
Yeah, we've done the wider, but I haven't, unless we do like modified lunges, I haven't had him squat staggered like that necessarily. So that'd be interesting.
Squat with a little stagger. Okay. It'll allow him to keep his foot on the ground. Then also with his leg length discrepancy, like stick a plate under there or a mat or something, and that will equalize his hips. At least for training. It's not going to change the way he walks, but at least when you're training, you can get that stimulus.
Well, and you guys are listening, we're talking about adaptive athletes mostly, but a lot of these imbalances are pretty typical in everyday athletes. Like just being able to get into a deep squat.
It's hard.
On your haunches.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys do anything with FMS or any of those movement screens or types of screens?
Nothing. Gray Cook was at our gym a couple months ago giving a presentation. Nothing formal like his FMS stuff. Like I haven't done his program. But in the gym we're at, we have movements and positions. Everything's about hitting positions. And you either can hit the position or you can't. And if you can't, we start walking backwards and then finding a plan to hit the position. So in essence, we do a functional movement screen, but we don't. We aren't scoring people and like retesting them, and it's not formal.
Yeah, you just want to see where their imbalances are.
Yeah, and then they can perform a movement safely. You know, and if you can, it's like, all right, you can't get your ankles don't bend far enough, your arms don't go far enough over your head. We need to rethink this movement for today. And try something a little less positionally intense.
Nice. I like that outlook. All right. If I was visiting San Fran again, or if somebody listening is visiting, what's the most adventurous thing they can do in a half a day out there?
Adventurous thing they can do in half a day? Okay. So something nice and fun that they can do is rent a bike, ride across the Sausalito Bridge.
I did
and
that.
You could ride. That's it's nice, right?
That's amazing.
It's awesome. Yeah, and you can make it really good and ride like 40 miles if you ride all the way up to Tiburon, and then you can have a few beers, and you can jump on a ferry.
Did that too.
And then the adventurous part is having a few beers and then riding back home on the bike.
Yes.
But you can avoid that and just jump on the ferry, which I recommend.
Is that the Golden Gate Park, right? The big park?
So there's a big park right in the middle. That's called Golden Gate Park.
Yeah, so we started there. We went through the park, and then we got down by the coast. We're actually where your picture was taken. One of your pictures that you sent me was taken.
Yeah, Fort Point. Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking really cool over there. And then, and then there's there's another picture of a couple more things here, like the pistol squat.
Yeah.
That's like a unicorn in the world of movement, right? Isn't that like a unicorn?
It's pretty, they push it pretty hard in CrossFit. It's like an expression of unilateral positional competency. But for somebody with a physical impairment, that is a daily move.
Yeah.
If you can't do that and you have an unsound side, you have a damaged leg, and say you re-injure it or you get a sore or a blister, which is common, and you can't really use your leg, you need to have a super leg on the other side. Yeah. And so if you can't squat your own body weight up and down and hit the mobility to do that, that's a problem. That's going to be while it's just a cool party trick for somebody to show off with, you know, for somebody with two good legs, that is a fundamental, important movement for somebody with one damaged side.
Yeah.
It's those type of things that I saw and I was like, hey, this isn't just fitness. Like, I can use that every day if I learn that.
Yeah. I'll link up some really good examples for that if you guys are listening, because some people might not know what a pistol squat is. You know, the only time in my life where I think I was, besides when I played ball in college, I was really strong back then. But in the last, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, when I used to rock climb a lot, being able to pistol squat is huge, because you get yourself in isolated one leg situations where you really, you have to find a way to get up on one leg from a really deep squat. And so there's a really good functional.
Oh yeah.
Functional movement for sure.
And the higher you can pull that leg up and get the next perch, the less, you know, arms you have to use, the less movements you have to make.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. Awesome, man. I feel like I've learned a lot about you. I feel like we got to do this again, because I want to learn some more on the day-to-day stuff. I want to learn more about Good Leg and what your bigger pictures. And before we go, do you have a reason that people should check out the website goodleg.org moving forward? Why should they check it out?
Yeah. So goodleg.org is basically a living journal of what I do on a day-to-day basis to progress my condition forward. So my recommendation is if you have something in your life, if you're dealing with some kind of chronic condition, or if it's, you know, something that isn't even medical, when there's no clear path forward, in the end, it all starts with you. And what I wanted to capture was, you know, that path. When you see people doing amazing things online, it's not this one-time event. It is day-to-day, waking up, finding a problem, executing on that problem, and moving just one step forward every day. And so I'm really big on that, because a lot of people come up to me and say, oh, you built this brace, and oh, you're so athletic. Maybe they don't say that, but you can.
You're so amazing.
You can do these athletic things, and I just tell them it wasn't this way. Like, I used to not even wear shorts. I was so ashamed of my leg, and it just took me walking into a gym, wearing shorts for the first time in like decades, and putting myself in situations where I had to walk myself back out from every day, over and over and over again, and I still do that. And so that's what my site's about, and I hope to show other people that it's not the end if, you know, the medical establishment has nothing on offer for you.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm here with Max Conserva, athlete on fire, obviously. Can't wait to learn more about it in a future date. I'm changing up the model for Athlete on Fire, too. I'm reaching out to people a lot more often, so I want it to feel like checking in with people that we've had on the show, so I definitely want to do that in the future. But check it out, goodleg.org. I'll have all of the social media on the show notes. I have a couple picks where he's looking pretty badass, and that'll tick up the confidence a bit more for the whole world. Thanks, Max. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, Scott. It was a real pleasure.
There you go. I love that interview. Max is he's just a perfect example of everybody having that athlete mentality deep down inside. And I think if you guys are listening and you can't figure out how to tap into it, just this show should do it. Or if you know somebody that needs to tap into what they're excuse has been for a long time, it's just a good mindset. And I'm going to do what I said. I'm going to start just, you know, I have a huge Skype list. I'm just going to start asking people if they want to talk and do this a little more regularly. I'm going to get away from the formal pieces, although we're going to still talk about things that bridge the gap between amazing athletes and the rest of us. If you think it's a good idea, let me know. If you think it's a stupid idea, let me know. You usually don't let me know when that happens, but I'd love to hear. Thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you guys next time. Appreciate it.